Good morning, everybody. It's the Matt Bubala Show here on Radio 720 WGN. Like this music. Roger Badish up in the newsroom. Shantae behind the glass. Matt Bubala here at the mic. How are you, Mr. Badish?
I am doing great, sir. Yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. So the flags across the way in the Wrigley Plaza.
Yeah.
What do we call that? Is that like a United Nations plaza? We have flags from all around the world over there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
They are at half staff, and I'm trying to figure out, is that a tax? Scalia still.
No. There were like 32 killed in another terrorist attack, about 76 wounded.
Is this the Iraqi soccer stadium explosion?
Yeah, I believe that's the one.
All right, but that was, you think that's
no,
from that?
There was another one.
The Brussels one? Would they
no,
be
no, no.
From
there
that?
Was one from yesterday. Let me look it up.
You know, if we were putting flags at half staff on attacks, they'd live that way.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm thinking this is more.
Well, I don't know. Flags are down, right? They're all at half staff.
They're all at half staff. What's interesting, though, and I've never noticed this, and I don't know if this is protocol or not, they're all at half. The American one, a little bit higher up than the
rest. It's supposed to be.
It is.
By law.
Really?
Yeah. American flag is always supposed to be higher than all other flags.
So if you're showing 18 flags, American one will be, even if it's just, is it like one flag length?
I'm not sure the exact. Yeah, but
when they're all flying high,
that,
I've never noticed that one.
I remember that from long time. Might even have been.
I know
Cub
when you
Scouts.
Have multiple on a flagpole,
the American one is always
on top, right? But that is a rule, right?
We learned a long time ago, I think it was in Boy Scouts, that, you know, when you're marching and you've got, you know, the Cub Scout flag, your troop flag, you've got the American flag, you might have the state flag or the city flag, something. The American flag is always held higher as you're marching. And that is the case at all times for the American flag, no matter what the circumstance. Even if you have a visiting dignitary, the American flag is always higher. He's frantically looking at it.
No, I'm just signing in. Well, that's interesting. I mean, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
But I am right about the flagpole, right? If you have multiple flags on a flagpole.
Yeah, American flags at the top.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Definitely.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's look into the current half-staff status.
Half-staff,
half-mast. What's the difference in that, Roger? Let's answer all the trivial questions.
Well, mast is on
a boat,
a ship.
Right?
Yeah.
But don't we say half-mast or we don't? Why does that stick in my head?
Half staff.
It's only half staff, not half mast.
No.
Okay.
I've always heard it and used it as half staff. Yeah.
Okay.
Not mast. Mast is for a boat, for a sail.
If you fly a flag on a boat, do you have to fly it at half mast sometimes?
Only if it's the Jolly Roger.
Those respectful pirates always lowering the. Oh, we're very respectful of the, you know, anything.
Arr, lower the flag, you boy. Keep it at half mast. Till we get to land, then we'll put it at half staff.
Shiver me timbers.
This wooden leg is killing me. Use my hook to scratch my back, though. Makes me feel much better.
Think of what a rotten life that would have been. On a peg leg and a hook.
Wood the hook would be coming after you. Chipping away at your leg.
You think that would happen? Sort of like flies on a horse. He's got to swat him away the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the hook would be worse than the peg leg, though.
Well, of course. Well, what if you had both and you went to swat the woodpecker with your hook and it
stuck in
your leg?
Well, at least you're
going
to swat a wooden leg and not your own real leg. That would be worse.
Much worse. You'd end up with another peg leg.
Do we know? I'm just going to ask Roger. This will be 3 hours of asking Roger weird questions. If you have one that you'd like to add, 312-981-7200. Do we know if in the history of piratry there ever really was a guy with a hook? Or do you think that's all made up in stories
and
movies and books?
You know, it would be fun to think that
happened. Do you think it would be practical? Think about the time. Well, the hook, I need to. What was he doing that he needed the hook? I could see like a pointer because I got a, I don't know. Push things,
it was curved
do things.
Pointer.
It was
curved. Wanted to grab onto things.
But what are you grabbing onto that you're not ruining with the hook?
So let's say that most of the time the pirate is fighting and has a sword in one hand, the good hand.
Right.
And then a hook
But that's pointing at himself.
Well, yeah, but it's hooked so you can catch the other sword and snap it.
I would have just built a sword onto my other fake hand.
Well, maybe he had the attachment.
Or just like a little bayonet. Just, there. You
could have.
You know, the hook. Because the pointy end is facing you on the hook.
But that's okay.
And you got the dull. No, I don't think so. Not if I'm fighting. Not I'd rather have a little stabber.
But your sword in the good hand. I want to make sure I correct myself.
Yeah, because if you pick it up with the wrong hand, it's not going to
work
at all.
It's long enough so that the other sword. Well, no, it's your sword is long enough so that if you had a pointer on your bad hand, you would never be able to get close enough. So the hook is to hook the other person's sword so you could cut off their hand so then they would need a hook.
And then, like, there's a hook store at each port, you think?
Or exactly.
There's a guy with a cart he's pushing around.
And then on the
fashioning
boat.
Fashioning hooks.
On the boat, you have, like, a special, you know, specialized services.
Do you think, like, they had a stone they sharpened them on? Kept
exactly.
Them?
One guy just sitting there, you know, every Wednesday you sharpen the hooks.
Yeah.
You know.
And keep them polished, probably. Because those could get rusty.
Sure. Well, you got to
do that saltwater air.
Oh, it's
that's
horrible.
Bad for them.
Yeah.
You don't want a rusty hook.
No, especially on the. It's horrible on your leg. You got to varnish the thing. You got to polish it all the time.
See, but I don't. Do you think that they had the metal legs like the hooks, or
not
do you
the
think
metal,
they
the
went
wooden.
With just wood?
I think it was wood.
Yeah,
it was cheap. Who can afford a metal leg?
Well, you're affording a metal hook for your hand. Why not go all out?
Yeah,
but probably could get a deal if you did them both at once.
Oh yeah, a twofer.
Yeah.
Might work.
What kind of like layaway they had and stuff. You imagine back in the time, you're a pirate, you're going, you know, port to port.
Yeah.
They're not taking credit. There's no like, well, I'll see you next month. I'll be back. We're going to go rob these people and then I'll be right. back. Can I get you then? And be like, you know, I don't know you that
leg.
Well. You're a pirate.
Leave me the leg and we'll talk about it when
the
you come
back. The peg
leg? Yeah.
Well, how's he going to sail without the peg leg?
Hop around a lot. Or sit.
Charles, I had to leave my leg at port. I can't do this. That's how the lazy pirates would get out
exactly,
of work.
Exactly, yeah.
Dude, just keep the leg. Keep the leg. No, it's better for me. You just keep the leg, and I'll see you next month.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then he's on the ship like, oh, I can't. I really want to help, but I can't. I don't have my leg. The dude kept it. And then all the other pirates getting so annoyed with him.
All right.
That'd be frustrating. Well, we are off to a crazy fun start here tonight, as you can tell. 312-981. Oh, here's some information from the 630. The hook is for gaffing fish. Pirates fish Ooh. When they get a day off from pirating because the pirates had it's little known fact, Roger. The pirates had a great union.
Yes. That, and, yes.
And so this 630 is right. And that makes sense that it was more of a recreational hook because they did like to fish. And that's great for reaching in the water, you know, yank back and you get a fish because, you know, I think the pirating union back in the day was a 4-on-3-off system. So they pirate for 4 days straight.
Exactly.
And then they get
in
port
and
then
port.
Three
right.
straight
yeah.
days
right.
off.
Right.
They'd make a little campfire and they'd fish.
I understand their name was the Amalgamated Pirates of the Caribbean. That was their union.
Yeah. That number 123, I think. Right?
Yeah.
The pictures on the cards were great because they were very notorious for saying, and this is where it came from, when they were about to take the picture, they'd go,
arr.
And they'd get that, like, one squinty right. eye, and they'd put, they actually all had their eyes, but they liked the patch thing, so they just put that on for the photos. They never actually wore the patch on the ship.
Oh, yeah, I mean, what a waste. I mean, you know.
I mean, can you imagine being a pirate? Think about this. I've got a hook for a hand, I got a peg for a leg, and I'm missing one eye.
Right.
So I've got no depth perception, I can't pick my nose,
right,
and it's hard to get around.
And I'll swing my sword, and if you happen to walk into it, because the other guy also has wooden leg.
Maybe.
The hook.
Maybe he's a newer pirate and hasn't suffered yet. You could always tell the new pirates.
Yeah.
Because he's got two legs, two hands, all pretty.
Yeah.
They did not like those guys.
No. He sunburned too fast, though.
I would bet you there were many pirates over the years who actually had fitted a hook and had a hand.
They faked it?
Yeah.
A faker pirate?
Well,
oh, man.
You got to fit in. You got to look like you've been there.
Right.
You got to look like you've done this before. And if you come in with two hands, they're like, dude, I'm so chopping off one of those hands. And I think if the guy's got a hook, you're like, oh, this dude's fought before.
Right, exactly.
You know? So it's harder to fake the peg because you got the whole leg there.
Right.
And that would be like,
unless
you
wear long pants, which
even
you know, pirates
so,
didn't,
even
you know,
they
so, couldn't afford.
How do you get the leg to look skinny enough to be a peg? I mean, that would be tough to pull off.
That's true.
I think the hook is you know.
Yeah.
John wants to add to this enlightening conversation. He's on 720 WJ. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm kind of wired. I'm a disturbed veteran, but I'm shaving because apparently I have to walk to Heinz in the morning because the local cab company, when I ask them to get me to Heinz, they don't know where that's at. But while I'm shaving, I was listening.
Okay.
One, I thank you for your awareness of the flag. It really means a lot to those of us who serve that people at least are aware of what's going on. But
well, I apologize that I don't know more about it, John, and thank you for your service to the country. We do appreciate it. But yes, tell me, because I'm looking over at the Wrigley Plaza right now, and we've got our flags at half staff, the American flag up a little bit higher than the rest, but I'm unsure as to why we're currently at half staff.
I'm not sure. I know there's a federal website. I'm assuming it's because of what happened in Brussels, but I don't have access to the web. Now, when a group of flags of every country are displayed, they all should be at the same height.
Okay.
That
see,
that is section. I got to see how this G of the. With the American Legion publics a really nice small booklet called it's Let's Be Right on Flag Etiquette, because we're all kind of rusty on it.
Okay.
The object being is we don't want to be disrespectful to other nations, so they should be all at the same height and about the same time and on separate poles. And traditionally, the American flag will be all – as you're looking at it, will be all the way to the left, nothing to the flag's right. Although in some cases, they'll put the American flag in the center.
Yeah, that's how it is at the Wrigley Plaza right now. It's in the center.
Right. And now I know now when it comes like to state flags, cities, you know, or other things, well, then, yes, the American flag should be prominent. Like in with your Boy Scout parade, you would hold the American flag would be the highest flag in your flag array. You might have your state flag, your municipalities. You might have, for example, a flag for the American Legion. You would show deference to that. And as far as flags on a pole, technically, according to the code, when you display one country below another, you're saying that we're dominating. We have defeated that country. Now, the common uses is people want to, you know, they want to declare their cultural heritage, which is fine. They're not really being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. But if you review the flag code, it's, you know, putting a POW flag below it, or maybe your you know, a college flag or a flag for your sports team is fine. But putting the American flag above another on a pole, according to the flag code, can be interpreted on an international basis as a bit of an insult.
Although, interesting. But if it was Puerto Rican Day and I'm Puerto Rican and at my house I did a flag for Puerto Rico, or if I'm, you know, Mexican or Italian or Irish or whatever, and I'm proud of my heritage, so I do both out there and I only have one pole, I would do American flag on top and whatever else
right.
I want to honor
and
right below it, right?
And what you're saying, what you're doing, is you're not meaning to be to be disrespectful. It's just, you know, if you study the flag code, it's the fine print.
By the way,
we've got that. We've got the code here.
You do have the code.
Yeah, we've got the code. When flown with flags of states, communities, or societies on separate flag poles, which I kind of think is what we're looking for here, which are the same height and in a straight line, the flag of the United States is always placed in the position of honor to its own right, and no other flags may be smaller. The other flags may be smaller, but none may be larger. No other flag ever should be placed above it, and the flag of the United States is always the first flag raised and the last to be lowered. So
okay,
if it cannot be above it and they're all in a straight line, then the American flag has to be at a higher position than the other flags.
When you're talking about state flags, as far as the like states of the state of the United States, yes. When you're talking about other nations, like at an international display, you want to show respect to the other nations also. But it also, again, it's become traditional. The flag, nothing to the flag is right,
mm-hmm.
But I have seen display. I believe there's a display out in Oak Brook where they put the American flag in the center. You know, it's kind of, you know, if somebody has the intent of being respectful, that's the most important thing.
Right.
Because, I don't know what date. And the flag code has been updated. You know, the Congress has changed it. Veterans, whether they're in uniform or not, are entitled to salute the flag rather than hold their hand over their heart. And that includes during the presentation of the national anthem or the recitation of the national anthem. And the tradition is that a veteran would render a salute and remain silent during the Pledge of Allegiance. And that's another little fine point that is getting lost. We've tried to encourage, you know, the veterans to acknowledge that they are veterans by granting them the honor of saluting the flag, whether they're in uniform or not. That's been a change recently, I think in 2008.
John, I got to hit the news here in a minute, but I really appreciate you sharing this information with us. Thank you so much for calling
in. It's nice that you guys are so aware, and we all can brush up on it, because I'll tell you, it does matter. All these neglected flags, it matters, especially when you're out there burying people with it. It really gets to you. Thank you much for your concern.
Absolutely,
John.
Thank you so much, and have a great morning. So it's interesting, Roger, because at Wrigley Plaza, it is in the center, but it's kind of an odd formation because it's kind of a U-shaped formation of flags. So all the way front towards Michigan Avenue, American flag in the center, state of Illinois on the left as we look at it, Chicago flag on the right as we look at it. And it is, by the way, Shantae got me this, the United States flags are at half staff until sunset today. In honor of the victims of the Brussels, Belgium attack.
Okay, that's right. And I did find one. I mean, there's a lot on the rules for the American flag. And I did find this. When flown with the national banner of other countries, each flag must be displayed from a separate pole of the same height. Each flag should be the same size. They should be raised and lowered simultaneously. And the flag of one nation may not be displayed above that of another. So they would be at the same height.
At the same height.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. There's our lesson for the morning. 312-981-7200. News is next on 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720 WGN. Thank you for being with us, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You're welcome to call in or text. Texter from 847 says, are there any penalties for not following the flag code? Well, that's a good question, isn't it? And if I am flying it incorrectly, I got another country's flag above, et cetera, could somebody pull up to my lawn and say, you know what, dude, that's a $30 fine. You can't fly the flag like that. No, they cannot do that. It says here, according to a big story CNN did on the flag for Memorial Day a couple of years ago, says, are there penalties for breaking the flag code? There is not one. The flag code is an odd duck in this regard. As part of the United States code, the flag code is technically federal law. However, the code doesn't outline any measures for enforcement or punishment. Basically, the flag code is a set of advisory rules for Americans who want to know the proper and respectful way to display their flag. Even if the flag code did provide measures for its enforcement, it's not clear that the measures would be constitutional. Individual states used to have their own prohibitions on and penalties for desecrating the flag, but the 1989 Supreme Court decision, Texas versus Johnson, invalidated these laws as infringements on free speech. Congress responded by passing the Flag Protection Act, which made flag desecration a federal crime. The Supreme Court struck down this law in the 1990 case, United States versus Eichmann. That's an interesting thing to get into, is the flag and proper display. I always see on Facebook somebody sharing, it's titled The Greatest Baseball Play of All Time, and it's Rick Monday grabbing the flag out of the protesters' hands. I'm not against anybody doing whatever they want to the flag. I think it is a freedom of speech. And I think that the country and its symbols should never be above everything else. I think, to me, that sounds like a dictatorship, where in Cuba you wouldn't be able to burn a picture of so-and-so. In Iraq, you wouldn't have been able to burn a picture of so-and-so. Things like that. I think it is still a symbol. And so if that is your expression of it, that is your expression of it. People are really going to hate you for it. But that is your right as an American to do that.
Well, look at the Olympics. That's the biggest showcase of all. And what do most, especially the track runners, What do most of them do when they win the race?
Wrap it around themselves?
They wrap it around
themselves. Well, that's much different than burning the flag.
No, I understand, you know what I mean? But it is not the proper display of the flag.
It's not, but I don't know if, I mean, the flag code does talk about wearing it as clothing, but it doesn't talk about flags itself. Section 8 of the code covers respect for the flag, and it explicitly states, no part of the flag should ever be used as a costume or athletic uniform. However, a flag patch may be affixed to the uniform of military personnel, firemen, policemen, and members of patriotic organizations. The flag should also never be used as wearing apparel, bedding, or drapery. Now, when the 1980 Olympic team won and Jim Craig had the flag draped around his neck,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it specifically is covered there in Section 8 because he's not actually wearing it as a jacket or a pair of shorts. You know, he's just got it draped around himself. I don't know that that would be quite a disrespectful thing to do with the flag. I think, you know, that is out of love and hugging and wrapping yourself in the American flag.
And we're not the only country that does it at the Olympics.
I would imagine
every
not.
Other country, you know, they carry the flags around.
Now here's
waving
a question
them
for you, Roger.
Sure.
When Michael Jordan wore the flag at the Olympics, because the Olympic uniforms, I believe, were Reebok or Adidas or whatever,
right.
And he was not going to be seen wearing some other brand, so he brought out a flag and draped it over himself.
Well, that's the same thing as what we just talked
about. I think that's different. I think that's very different because that was an economic decision to make the flag part of his outfit. That wasn't we celebrated, we're winning, let's grab the flag and hold it and wrap ourselves in it. That was, that to me is now I'm using the flag not for its intended purpose.
I understand completely what you're saying. I think that it could be put in the same regard as displaying the flag out of being proud for your country and your team and stuff like that.
But that's
the
not why
I understand that. But he's doing the same thing with it.
Right. So he's obeying the letter of the law, but he is certainly not obeying the
spirit. Right.
I would say that one.
Yeah.
On that.
Nobody arrested him, though.
By the way, Texter wrote, I fly my pirate flag above all other flags, matey. So if you have a pirate in your neighborhood who's flying the Jolly Roger above the American flag, you need to just knock on his door and say, excuse me, Mr. Pirate, sir. That is against code.
I would just turn my cannon towards the flagpole and just lay one broadside against his ship there.
Just put a big lead cannonball right through his nice vinyl siding. That'll show him, why did I move to the suburbs? Poor old retired pirate living out in Schaumburg.
Yeah, right.
Arr, they just don't understand me out here.
Hey, me and my Jolly Roger.
They don't make the aluminum cans anymore. I can't open the bottle tops with this hook. I used to just pop it right open. Have a good cold one
now
in the afternoon.
Now it's twisted. I can't twist it.
My hook is not short enough for the twist. I need a bottle top hook. Oh.
Arr.
It's tough being,
you know, it reminds me
tough of being a retired pirate.
I was watching Mary Poppins with the kids, with the grand girls the other night. And at the corner of the street, the old seaman there with the cannon on top of the roof. Every
Roger,
time.
I've not seen Mary Poppins recently enough to be able to go see
your
for scene with you on this.
Oh.
No, Mary Poppins is the Dick Van Dyke one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Julie Andrews, yeah.
Julie Andrews, yes.
And there's old retired sea captain. At the corner of the block, who at the top of every hour, he fires off the cannon.
At the top of every hour?
Yes.
Oh, that's the most annoying neighbor in the world.
I know.
What the hell's wrong with this guy? Dude, stop! I understand what time it is, for goodness sakes. Now, how did he do that? Does he have, like, a fake shell? Because he wasn't shooting a cannonball out, was he?
Just powder. And he had his first mate doing it, of course.
He wasn't even doing it?
No, he was standing there counting down, and the first mate had to make sure everything was...
So wait,
yeah.
He wasn't on a ship, he's in a house.
On his roof.
He's got a cannon on the roof.
Yeah.
How do you get a cannon up to your roof? Those things had to be heavy.
Well, you get a little hoist and a little, you know, you just pull it right up to the roof. What do you mean it's heavy? So, of course it's heavy. It's a cannon.
I know. Those houses weren't built to code like that. It wouldn't have withstood seven.
Who said it was built to code?
Well, how would the cannon sit on the roof then, Roger? It'd fall right through to the third floor. Come on. Let's
probably
be realistic.
The first floor.
So at the top of every hour, this knucklehead's out there blowing off a cannon.
Right.
And was the whole neighborhood ticked off at him?
Well, everyone was busy making sure nothing fell down in their homes because...
Did it shake everybody's house?
It shook everyone's house, yeah.
So it's like having living by the L, except every hour this guy's blowing off a cannon.
Right, right.
And were they so like, I could see he moved to town, and I'm like, dude, what's with the guy in the cannon every hour? And they're like, you know, that's a good point, but this crazy woman flies around, so we're kind of more paying attention to that right now.
Right, yeah.
We'll get to the cannon guy, but she's like... Got to be a witch or something. That would be a good dark retelling of Mary Poppins.
Very,
like,
very
the,
dark.
You know, you combine that with, you know, one of the a witch story, and they're trying to chase her down and burn her.
Well, they are trying to remake Mary Poppins.
Yes. Who did we see? I think Emily Blunt is going to be Mary Poppins. I think that's a fine choice, by the way, if you're going to remake Mary Poppins.
I hope they do it right.
I think it was, and I apologize if I'm wrong, because I'm sure Dean has probably interviewed Dick Van Dyke as well, but I know our buddy Dave Plyer has interviewed Dick Van Dyke. And I don't remember if it was in an interview with Dave or somewhere else that I've heard this recently. But I think it was. I think I heard Dave playing some of his interview with Dick Van Dyke that they were talking about the accent he does in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what Dick Van Dyke said. I'm sure it's at WGNRadio.com, but it is something about... you know, somebody giving him some lessons or whatever, but it being like the most awful English accent ever. And I think him being taunted mercilessly forever about how bad it was the way I did my English accent. Yeah. It was just very an American doing
Mary
an English
Poppins?
Accent.
He kept like dropping letters. All right, Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like, you know, it was a cartoony movie. So I thought it fit. You know.
Who knew when you're watching it? You just, and then there's Julie Andrews. Oh my God. Gorgeous Julie Andrews.
You're in love with Julie Andrews?
I was.
A little bit.
Yeah.
See, it's funny. I haven't seen Mary Poppins in forever, but we see Sound of Music at least once a year in our house because Colleen loves that.
You should watch Mary Poppins. You'll sit there and you'll start. You'll be getting very emotional.
Yeah, you think so? Oh, really?
I was singing the songs and the girls were looking at me. Shut up. We're trying to watch a movie.
What is the big Mary Poppins song?
Well, which one? Supercalifragilistic.
Expialidocious. Okay, that's a Dick Van Dyke one more than her, right?
Well, no, they both sing it.
No, it is.
They both sing
duet.
It at the end of the race.
And but is there one, if there was Chim Chimney Chiroo,
right. Or Spoonful of Sugar.
Don't know that one.
Spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Medicine go down.
There's a reason
medicine.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, those are the ones that she sings. And then some of the other characters sing some of the songs. The father sings a
but there's
of
not
songs.
One song, if like somebody said Mary Poppins, it would be Chim Chimney Chiroo.
Yeah,
that's like
I'd
the
say so. Yeah.
song that
yeah.
resonates. And
she sings it herself. Yeah.
Yeah. Julie Andrews, she was quite a... Is she,
she's still alive.
Yeah, good for
oh,
her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so is Dick Van Dyke, and he's like 90. Right?
Yeah.
I think he's... And there's been some recent social media videos that he's been into.
Well, he was out when they did a big... people from Disneyland came out and threw a huge dancing, singing celebration for his birthday, and he went down afterwards and started dancing with them.
That's incredible.
The guy's got legs, and you know what I'm talking about.
No, that sounds weird. I don't want to know, I don't think.
He's got legs to be able to keep dancing, and he's got legs because he's been around so long, and he's done so much.
He has. All right, 847 writes, and then there's Rocky and Apollo. Apollo who?
Apollo Creed?
Apollo wore the American flag shorts.
Right, and that
and
would be
did,
a violation,
And then I think
it?
Rocky wore them, I think, when he...
As a tribute.
When he fought the Russian dude.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Russian dude kills Apollo.
Exactly. And that's
and then
why
Rocky's
got to
fight
Rocky
him.
Wears him as a tribute.
And what was the guy's name?
The Russian guy?
Ivan Drago, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
I think you're right.
I will break you. And then 630 writes, my aunt actually, this is interesting. Tell me our flag ruling on this. My aunt actually did a painting of Jimi Hendrix with the American flag as the canvas. She only meant it to convey American spirit. That would rub people the wrong way.
Oh, that's a desecration of the flag. by actually painting on it.
I bet it would look really cool, though.
I bet you it would, especially if you had Hendrix playing in the background.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the painting. It's Hendrix on it. That is one of the all-time great. All right, stop it, Rob.
Sorry.
You're going to do the whole thing there, I think.
I actually had to edit that for a video. That song, the Hendrix Star Spangled Banner, for a video many, many, many moons ago.
Well.
Because it's a long piece, and the video had to be a certain length.
It was too long.
The song was too long for the video. But I made it fit. I made it work.
Good for you, sir. Good for you. And how long was it? I think that was about a 5-minute rendition. You know, bet on the Super Bowl every year how long somebody will sing, and it usually comes in around 2.5 minutes. I wonder how long that...
I think the Hendrix was 7 some odd minutes. Yep. You want to look it up? Are you looking it up?
I'm not looking it up.
I'm looking it up.
I'm going to take your word for it.
And do you have to take a break?
Well, we could. I mean, sure. Why not?
Oh, good.
Roger says take a break. What do? We take a break. That's what we do. 312-981-7200. We have more to talk about than this, people. Don't you worry. Besides pirates and flags and all these good things, I will read... And bear with me. I apologize if you're going to be offended by this, but I don't think you should be. I think this is an interesting thing. Vanity Fair had the obits writer from the New York Times write an obituary for Jesus. As if back in the day. If he was writing the obits back in the day, I guess chiseling them is what he would have been doing. But that's not true. There's papyrus, right? If he was writing the obit back in the day, how would he have written it? I have a very long, lengthy obituary for Jesus coming up later in the show. And it doesn't go away. Let's talk a little bit about the election and where you stand on things and what you're thinking as we get further down the road. It gets crazier every week, and I was away for a week, so I want to talk about that a little bit more. 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Bubala with you here, Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. Hey, coming up later in the show, Shantae is efforting, as we like to say in the biz, a guest from Ireland. Roger, I saw this story earlier in the week. The headline, Remote Irish Island Seeks Americans Fleeing Donald Trump Presidency. We hear this every 4 years, pretty much. People are ticked off at somebody who might go, I'm moving to Canada. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Which, by the way, I think is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And don't say that, because you're an American. And whoever gets elected, you're going to survive it. And you're going to protest when you think they're doing something wrong, and you're going to applaud when you think somebody's done something right. But it drives me nuts when people say, I'm going to move. That, to me, is this is going way out there, but that's more offensive to me than a Trump presidency. As offensive as I think that would be, saying, I will just leave means you're a coward and you're a quitter. And that's not what we're supposed to be as Americans. Stay and fight for what you believe in. Stop with the stupidity of I'm moving to Canada. Alec Baldwin. That's the stupidest thing ever.
I'll move to Canada.
Then go. Go ahead. I don't care.
And after all is said and done, after the dust settles, after the election, nobody's going nowhere.
I wouldn't think so.
Well, seriously.
And quite honestly, people love to complain about things.
Mm-hmm.
And if the person you hate gets elected, then you got something to crab about for the next 4 years. So enjoy it, because people like to crab about things. So anyways, the story, the headline was that they, you know, if Donald, you know, here, move here. And Shantae was just speaking with the woman who is the development officer for Inishturk, which is a remote island off of Ireland. And so Shantae's talking to her like, hey, she's like, I never said those things.
What?
Yes, we're looking for people to move here. We're not encouraging you to move because of the president. We're just trying to encourage people to move here. And a bad journalist apparently twisted her words around. So hopefully Shantae will still be able to get her on the phone and we'll find out a little bit about Inishturk. And if
cool.
I'm saying it correctly, it's off, I think you say County Mayo, has seen its once thriving population plummet to just 58 people on this island. Now, it's not like a Caribbean island. It is Ireland, so it's not going to be the greatest weather year-round.
But it's a beautiful area, even when it's raining.
I do want to go to Ireland sometime.
You
been
and
there?
Me both.
You
My
haven't been
wife,
there?
my sainted Irish Catholic wife.
Arr. Stop with Irish the, pirates.
Irish
we are.
Pirates.
Old piratey.
And her sister mm-hmm. and her husband. Mm-hmm. We wanted to go to Ireland and Northern England last year, but things kind of got in the way in our household, unfortunately.
Isn't it funny how illness and cancer will do that to people?
Yeah.
It doesn't just debilitate you. It screws everything up.
Yeah. Doggone
damn
it.
Damn cancer.
Arr. So,
should have pirated that.
Arr. Give me the therapy, doctor.
So we're not this summer, but maybe next summer. We're going
to
try. And
I know
her brother
has get John Williams to do one of those cruises over there, and then just go
Steve.
With John.
John and Steve.
Bertrand, Steve, Judy, whoever. Get over there with one of those things. Actually, call Bertrand and say, hey, well, how about I take some people to Ireland?
Well, really?
Ooh. I mean, you should.
Well, Andrea's taken a bunch of people to Greece.
That makes total sense.
Total sense.
Boy, although the Greek contingent here,
yeah,
they were probably duking it out. Dean, Andrea, and Anna figure out who gets to go to Greece.
Yeah.
Well, I have no Irish ancestry at all. I'm 50% Slovak, 50% Hungarian. My beloved wife, Colleen, let me think about this. She is 50% Polish. She is one quarter... God, what is she? 50% Polish, 25% Italian, 25% Irish. Something else mixed. I don't even know. So,
wow.
We are raising some mutts in our house, my friend. Let me tell you. We have some rescues in our house that we're raising.
I could just see when the kids went to school and they were asked by the teacher to draw the flag of your ancestry. They probably either left it all white or something, saying there's too many colors.
Yeah, I mean, there's at least like, six different things going on for my kids, which I think I'm happy about. You know, I know people love to be, we're all Irish or we're all Italian or whatever. And I wonder, and I haven't read studies on this, so I don't know. But I like to think, this is how I look at it.
Okay.
Hopefully my kids, because I wonder if a lot of issues we face health-wise sometimes derive from... Not mixing the gene pools up enough, you know, not getting a good vat of stew going there. And I like to think, you know, we're so spread out and all over the place. Maybe that's going to be good for everybody. I could be wrong. I have no idea. Somehow both of my parents smoked like chimneys in the shadows of the factories mm-hmm. of Whiting, Indiana their whole lives and have survived well into their 70s without major health issues. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, yeah.
But, you know, who knows why. But so we're going to talk a little bit about Ireland coming
up. That would be wonderful.
In a bit. That will be fun. We're going to read the obituary for our Lord Jesus.
I saw that headline earlier today.
I think it's a great idea. And I was reading it earlier tonight. And so he took and was teaching me things mm-hmm. that I don't. I need the footnotes afterwards to see where he got it. Because he's talking about his brothers and sister.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to think, okay, where did that. You know what's funny is because Patty was talking about in Lutheran school, they learned like the 8 things Jesus said on the cross.
Right.
Now, I went to Catholic school my entire life. I didn't pay the best of attention, but I don't remember learning about 8 things Jesus said on the cross.
The stations of the cross.
The stations of the cross are not 8 things he said on the cross. That's the moments we go through, the scourging, the him carrying the cross, him falling. That's all these moments on the way to the crucifixion. Right. That I do remember.
See, I don't listen to my wife when she talks about that.
I can't follow that at all.
I'm cleaning the cannon.
Shante, you'll need to send an email to Nick DiGilio that at 3:15, Roger commented on cleaning his cannon. We'll give him a moment to reset before we introduce the news.
Okay.
Now that it's good and all polished up.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. The news is brought to you by good old Cannon Cleaner. Here with the news, it's Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. It's 3:08 in the morning, everybody. If you're not home right now, you're about to make some bad choices with your life. It's time to go home. Take a cab if you've been out drinking. But if you're thinking there's still one more place to hit before we go home, that's probably not going to be your best option. I'm thinking that's the one you'll look back on tomorrow and say, God, he was right. We should have gone home at 3:08 in the morning. What the hell were we thinking? That's generally, Roger, I think on the weekends when you're out, you don't want to the next day have to say, what the hell were we thinking?
Exactly.
You might want to say, whew, that was worth it. But I'm guessing that by now, 3:08, yeah. If you haven't figured out the trouble you're getting into, it's not good trouble to get into.
And not only that, but if it's 3:08 and you still don't think you've done enough on a Friday night, Saturday morning.
Well, you might have just started an hour or so ago.
Well, if you just got off work, yeah.
Oh, Roger, but, no. Sometimes Friday night, you get off work at 5, you go home, you rest up.
Oh, no, 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 no.
And then somebody calls, you say, well, it's 11.
Maybe, yeah, but if you got to go home on a Friday night, if you don't have something planned already.
You go home and you rest up, Roger.
Nah.
Kids these days, Ashante, they don't go out till like 11 o'clock at night.
Really?
Yeah, Ashante's not in her head, yes.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so out of touch.
Well, yeah, we could have told you that. That's not news, Roger.
Well,
you polishing your cannon was. But the rest of this is not enlightening us. So a couple weeks ago, I missed the show because I was in Las Vegas with our friend who you just played some in the news, our friend Steve Dale.
Yeah.
So I syndicate in my company outside here, Black Dog. We syndicate Steve Dale's radio shows, his national versions of his radio show. Mm-hmm. And so we go to these big veterinary conferences every year. We meet with sponsors. He interviews people for the radio. We shoot videos for different clients, et cetera. And so we were just in Las Vegas for the Western Veterinary Conference, this huge, huge conference out there at the Mandalay Bay Hotel. And it's weird because it's 2 hours earlier out there, right? So right now it'll only be 1:10, 1:11 in the morning.
Right.
And two different nights, we were out until 4:30 in the morning, Las Vegas time.
Yeah.
But one night I was in bed sleeping or ready to go to sleep. And then I get texts from clients like, hey, we having a drink tonight at like, 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all right, well, I guess that's what I'm here for. Here we go. And then I'd have to literally get out of bed and get dressed and then head down to the bar.
It's a 24-hour town, baby.
It's a rough job, Roger. Yeah.
I lived
rough
there
job.
3.5 years.
That's right.
There.
You did.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah. It doesn't look anything. I think, when was I last there? Maybe about 5 years ago. It doesn't look anything like it did when we left in 79. It's completely different.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, 79, God, it must have been sort of the original Vegas still.
It still was.
I mean,
yeah.
Was there a monster?
Yeah, it still was.
Was there a monster hotel there yet?
No.
There wasn't even one.
Well, the MGM Grand was the monster.
The original MGM Grand.
The original MGM Grand.
Did that one burn? Is that the one that had the fire?
Yes, that's the one that had the fire.
My dad was out in Vegas on business.
It was like the summer after I left.
My dad was out in Vegas on business when that fire happened.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't in that hotel, but he was out there.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
We were still looking for mobsters underneath big boulders out in the desert.
Were you really?
Yep.
And
I was there for the Spilotro trial.
Is that the one in Casino?
Mm-hmm.
In the movie Casino?
Mm-hmm.
Spilotro, are those the brothers that ended up in the cornfield?
They ended up in the cornfield in
Indiana,
yeah.
Get out of here.
I was there. I was in the courtroom.
What do you think of the movie Casino?
Had my tires slashed and everything.
Get out of here.
I did.
As a reporter covering it?
Yeah, as a reporter. Well, it wasn't just the casinos with the mobsters, but a lot of the city government, especially North Las Vegas, where you had a lot of people of influence that were controlling the city government, city contracts, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I was doing my reporter thing out there, and one day I come out of City Hall in Vegas, and my car had all four tires slashed.
Had you been noodling around in something that they were getting upset about, or you were just annoying because you're a reporter?
I was probably annoying because I am annoying, but I'd like to think it was.
Yeah, but most people don't slash your tires over that.
Well, that's true. They just punch me in the nose. But I like to think it was because I was poking my nose into business that they didn't think anyone should know about.
Now, we all like to think, Roger, that when that would happen, we'd just galvanize and say, boy, you know what? I'm doing the right thing. Then I'm going to keep going. But in reality, I might go, you know what? Maybe I don't look into those things so much anymore because that is real, and I got to buy four new tires, and next time it could be my lung.
True.
So how did you react to that?
I just kept doing my thing.
Yeah?
I was very naive. back then. Extremely naive.
Thought you just ran over four nails?
No. No.
Well, look at that. How did I get four flat tires? That's
son
crazy.
Of a gun.
Oh, there must have been nails on the street.
A whole bunch of them. Must have run through a roadblock.
Doggone it.
Yeah. No, I go, son of a Peter Murphy, as my mother would say. And I called up a shop. They came out, towed the car, replaced four tires. And I just went about my business like a complete idiot. I kept reporting what I was reporting and covering what I was covering. And
did you tell your bosses what happened? And what did they say?
No, I didn't.
You didn't tell your bosses?
No.
Why?
Why? What would they have done?
Hopefully bought me four new tires. Nah. I'd have been like, you know what? This is kind of work-related, so you want me to keep driving to City Hall? How about four new tires?
No, it was... I got to know, eventually, enough people in city government. I got in pretty good with the Board of Trustees for Vegas, City Council, and a handful of people in the police department and stuff, and I didn't have any troubles after that. So,
fascinating. Well... So we were out there late at night, and I was, you know, telling you that, you know, that's kind of how things start. That's how things roll. Colleen and I also, I worked right before this. Last weekend I wasn't here because we had our first baseball tournament of the season in Nashville. So our 10-year-olds, Tri-Cities Travel 10-year-old team went down to Nashville. We had a great Saturday, won two games, had an early exit on Sunday, ran into a really good team early in the morning, Sunday morning. So that was disappointing.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful to be down in Nashville, and we got a good group of parents, and that was a lot of fun. But before that, Colleen and I were in Mexico.
Ooh.
We got to spend 4 days in Mexico.
Man, look at you. Vegas, Mexico.
Well, it's so funny, Roger. This time of year... I have to go to three veterinary conferences every year. This is when they are.
Oh, okay.
But this is also when we want to get away because it's the tail end of winter.
Sure.
And we like to go then because then we feel like when we come back, there's this light at the end of the tunnel.
Spring
is coming. It will be here soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
So January and February are always, and a little bit of March are always very weird months for me. And then the rest of the year, I'm pretty much around here and, you know, coaching baseball, hanging out with you.
Sure.
But, it's funny, our kids keep saying to us, well, if Donald Trump gets elected, you won't be able to go to Mexico anymore. And I'm like, no, I think we'll still be okay to go there. I think we'll be fine.
What?
They're like, I don't know. You know, they're all nervous about the Mexico is going to really be mad at us. And
Dad,
you can't go down
there. Climb a wall that high? I mean,
I'm going to dig right under it. Me and El Chapo, we're getting through that. Don't worry about it. Yeah, so they're all nervous about, you know, if Trump gets elected, this or that, this or that. And it's funny as these elections drag on.
Right.
I think I told you about this a few weeks ago. Maybe I didn't maybe I didn't want to reveal it on the air, but I was down at some relatives' houses, a relative's house, and it's, you know, mid to southern Illinois. And the subject of politics came up, which I did not want to come up because I know that my family is probably not in the same mindset as I am. So I just don't. It's this election more than ever. I mean, when President Bush got reelected, it was pretty contentious, I would say. A lot of people really didn't like President Bush. A lot of people did. Whatever. This is the most contentious to me that it's been since then. And this is way more contentious than even that was. So I didn't want it to come up. It did come up. Uh-oh. And they were all somewhat bashing Trump. And I felt relieved.
Oh, really?
Okay. Good. Because I was all worried that I was going to have relatives going, Trump, you're... So I felt all good about that. But then Hillary came up.
Uh-oh. In the discussion.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was called a murderer.
What?
She was said she committed treason.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just sitting here like, okay. Okay, because I'm like, they're like, oh, I'd never vote for Trump. And I'm like, well, it's going to be Hillary and Trump. And they're like, Hillary. And they all just start going to town. And so it's interesting because, Roger, we keep seeing these national polls that show that Trump, you know, that who would win against who, and it's all over the place.
Exactly.
And Bernie Sanders does a little bit better sometimes in these national polls than Hillary does.
Yep.
And now I see why. It's not because people tend to like – there is such a – people either love Hillary or they despise Hillary.
Very divisive.
There is no middle ground with Hillary, it seems like. Nobody's like, Hillary. oh my God, you bring up Hillary to somebody and they're either just such a supporter and the I'm with her campaign or.
But isn't that the case also with Trump? I've never seen any middle ground on Trump.
I don't know, because I don't know with Trump that I ever hear anybody go, he knows what, he's the greatest, he's this, he's, I never hear that. I hear, hey, he speaks his mind, he's this or that. You know, maybe in certain sections there are people that are crazy, drooling love with Trump, but I don't feel like I hear that. I hear he's different, he's speaking his mind, he's this or that. It seems to me more there's this like of Trump as a dislike of other politicians, that he's looked at like he's not a politician, he doesn't owe anybody anything, and he'll tell it like it is. None of this political cruck nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
So how did the discussion go at
Stopped talking about it right after that.
Yeah.
Once I heard treason and murderer, I was like, oh boy.
Well, you said, I got to go to the store pick
something
up.
Let's get dinner on the table. We got to get going.
And then, you went from a discussion of politics to a discussion of baseball and said, how about them Cubs? And they all looked at you and said, well, how about them Cardinals?
Well, luckily my family has stayed Cubs fans no matter how far south they have moved. So
that's,
we've got that going at least. Yeah, next thing you know, they're going to be White Sox fans or something.
Hey, watch it now. No, I'm kidding.
Then it would be real trouble.
I come from a split family, you know that. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, Cardinals fans.
No, right. No, White Sox and Cubs.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't know my dad was a Sox fan for so many years, because the only time we went to Comiskey Park was when his company would have an outing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that's because they always went to Comiskey Park. Mm-hmm. And then they started going to Wrigley Field. And then my mom wanted to go to Ladies' Day at Wrigley Field. My dad always ended up dropping her off.
He
would never go
game.
In the park. It was ridiculous, and I never understood it for years and years and years. And then I don't know if it was my sister or somebody in the family says, well, yeah, Dad's a big Sox fan, which is funny because he was a Sox fan from the North Side.
Yeah.
So, and Mom loved the Cubs. Oh, my goodness gracious.
So. It's funny. So I married into a Sox family. My wife is the only sane one in the group who is a huge Cubs fan. My mother-in-law is a ridiculous Sox fan, and I love my mother-in-law. I love her dearly. An annoying Sox fan.
Oh, my gosh.
She used to listen to Pat and Ron to hear the Cubs lose because she
would enjoy
it.
Oh, that's just evil.
Oh, she's awful. She's awful. She was like a White Sox groupie. I believe she brought Bill Mazeroski over to her parents' house for dinner once.
Wow.
Because she'd hang out at the park after the games and meet the players. Yeah. And Grandpa Ralph, my wife's grandpa, dearly departed Grandpa Ralph, he was an Andy Frayne usher at Wrigley Field in the 30s. And Senior Vec, no, I'm sorry. Senior Vec, whose dad worked for P.K. Wrigley. So Bill Vec Sr.
Right.
Speaking of Pirates, because he had a peg leg, right?
That's right.
He did.
Yeah.
Bill Vec Sr. would give Grandpa Ralph a ride home from Wrigley.
Is that cool? Because
their parents lived down Waveland Avenue. Colleen's parents lived in the same house for like 70 years on Waveland Avenue. Grandpa grew up in this house and then bought it from his parents. So he was about 18, 20 blocks west of Wrigley on Waveland Avenue. And he would go there in Andy Frayne. And you'd go there every day and you'd either get on or you didn't sometimes, or you'd finish work. And then, so Bill Vec Sr.'s father worked for Mr. Wrigley, who owned the Cubs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so Vec also worked for the Cubs. And so he'd give young Elliot, as he called Grandpa Ralph, because he was Ralph Elliott, a ride home sometimes down Waveland Avenue. He's got great stories. So Grandpa Ralph was a Cubs fan until, and I have to look into the history of this, but he claims that they fired a manager because he was Catholic.
What?
Because they were Masons and they fired the Catholic manager. And he turned on the Cubs ever since then, and then he became a Sox fan.
That's wild.
And then raised a Sox fan daughter, and Colleen's brother's a Sox fan, et cetera, et cetera. But I married the smart one. She's a big Cubs fan.
Married the smart one.
And she hangs on. I mean, thank God the Cubs are good now, because it was starting to take a toll on the marriage, Roger. the four-year rebuilding.
Oh, right.
Where she
right,
wouldn't
right.
buy into it's okay, we're rebuilding.
Right.
She would still hang on every pitch and every day and get upset.
Yeah.
And have to say, I don't understand, why do they stink so bad, blah, blah, blah. And she'd get so upset about it and be like, honey, draft picks, it's fine. No.
Yeah.
No, why are they pitching him? Why? And she, man, she gets into it. So we're very excited, although she's getting very upset about all these people predicting the Cubs to win. Well, because it's a lot of pressure, and you know, you got that going on, and you know, you don't like that.
Well, I'm sitting here during spring training going, all right, if we've got all this power and all this pitching, why are we losing all these games?
She said the other day, she's like, well, the record's not very good in spring training. I'm like, honey, guys are pitching no matter what. They're putting them in a certain amount of innings. You cannot look at the record in spring training and think this is indicative of what's going to happen. Don't worry about that. Yeah, it's going to be a rough 4 months in my house, Roger.
I know.
They better stay injury-free.
Do we have the paddles up here? Do we have the
an AED? I got trained on an AED. I could help you with that if you ever
Thank
know.
You.
Somebody I, ever I, goes down here.
I probably will.
I have my little league training. I know how to work the paddles. Although, have you ever seen those AEDs? But God, we are all over the place tonight, by the way. Have you ever seen how those paddles work now? It's
no,
not like, you
I,
know,
I,
on the TV show
the
where
ones.
Everybody clear and
right.
They don't do that. But at every pretty much Little League field or any park district place, probably, you're going to see a sign that says AED. Mm-hmm. And there's this little box in there that has this thing. You unzip it, open it up, hit the pot. It's so brilliantly foolproof.
Hmm.
Open it up. There's a button that says on. You push the button.
Right.
And then it starts talking to you.
Whoa.
And literally telling you what to do.
That is cool.
And it's extremely simple of, you know, getting the metal off anybody's shirt or anybody's chest.
Their body, right.
You put these, you peel off the pads, you put them on them. It kind of tells you with adults, it's kind of like one up high on the chest and one down low. So there could be a cross current kind of going through
oh,
the heart.
Okay.
If it's a smaller child, you put one on the front, one on the back. And then it takes a measurement. And
before you even hit the button to do it.
You don't hit a button to do anything. Once you hit this on, this thing takes over pretty much. And it'll say, you know, it'll take a reading to see if the heart is working or not. Because if it is, it's not going to do anything.
Oh.
But if it isn't, it's going to give it a little shock and get them going again. But basically, once you plug it in, put the pads on, your hands off, and you're making sure the police or fire are coming.
They're
really brilliant and wonderful things. And, you know, if you're ever a volunteer doing anything anywhere that there are those, you should go through a little training session to figure it out. So I got to learn that and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
I'm going to have to find where ours is up here, just in case the Cubs have a rough season.
Or a really good season.
Or a really good season, right, because it's like you were always in denial, you know that, Cubs fans. Like, yeah, we know they're going to be great, and we know they're going to be great, and with our fingers crossed.
We know they're going to be great when they're going to suck. And now that they're supposed to be great, we're nervous that they're not going to be great.
Exactly.
I'm not nervous they're going to be good, although, you know, Chris Bryant struck out a ton last year, even though he hit 275 and had a lot of home runs. He's working on his – it was an interesting article in the Trib about him working on his swing, that there was too much – upward arc in his swing, and he was hitting too many balls too high in the air.
Right.
And because Wrigley tends to blow in the spring and stuff like that. He's trying to hit more line drives and make more contact. That's what he's working on. But, you know, him and Schwarber and all these guys, you worry about a sophomore slump, about the pitchers figuring them out a little more than they adjust to them. So it could be,
and
you
the
know,
Sports Illustrated jinx.
The jinx. It could be a tough season for them. We had really no injuries last year to speak of. Now Jake Arrieta came out of a game early, I believe, on Thursday because of a blister. And all I could think of is, oh, God, Kerry Wood all over again. And I love Kerry Wood. He's one of my favorite Cubs of all time. But I remember at points in his career, he would keep getting blisters on his fingers and coming out of games. And all I could think of is, oh, please don't let this dog Arrieta all year long now that he's going to have these goofy blister issues.
Well, who's their number two pitcher?
That would be John Lester.
Lester's got that bone chip in his elbow that he had before they...
Signed him,
right, and that everyone's saying it's no big deal. He's had it for a long time. Everyone knows about it. He's fine.
Well, I hope that's true.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to do the news, and then we're going to chat a little bit about Mr. Trump and Mr. Cruz and their latest kerfluffles and this whole National Enquirer silliness. And how much stock or not you're putting into that. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you. Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Happy Holy Saturday. As Patty was saying, we don't shouldn't really say Happy Good Friday because that sounds weird. And I don't know what we say about Good Saturday. But
it's
I say
all,
happy.
It's all good.
It's all good. That's what it's they said good. Back in the day.
Yeah.
Ah, it's all good. Don't worry about it. Yeah. People felt guilty the next day.
Well, that's how we got Good Friday, isn't it? They said, what day is today? It's Friday? Yeah. How's your Friday going? It's good.
That year? Right that
yeah.
time?
Yeah.
On the other side of town. They're just going about their business. Yeah. Had no idea.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the election just a little bit here. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. Scott Adams, you ever read Dilbert? Comic strip Dilbert.
Oh, yeah.
Scott Adams, the creator of the comic strip Dilbert, is predicting that Donald Trump will win the presidency in a landslide.
What?
He says he's running on our emotions and appeals to our human irrationality. Mm-hmm. He says that Trump himself has turned the campaign around. On the stump, the real estate mogul is not running on the knowledge of his numbers or the dissection of the data. He is running on our emotions, Adams says, and sly appeals to our own human irrationality. Since last August, in fact, when many were calling Trump's entry a clown candidacy, the Dilbert cartoonist was already declaring the Donald a master in the powers of persuasion who would undoubtedly rise in the polls. And last week, Adams began blogging about how Trump can rhetorically dismantle Clinton's candidacy next. Adams is not endorsing Trump or supporting his politics. He wrote, I don't think my political views align with anybody, not even another human being. And he is not saying that Trump would be the best president. What the Bay Area-based cartoonist recognizes, he says, is the careful art behind Trump's rhetorical techniques. And the Donald, he says, is playing his competitors like a fiddle before beating them like a drum. He believes Trump will win because he's a master persuader. The Manhattan mogul is so deft at the powers of persuasion, Adams believes that the candidate could have run as a Democrat and by picking different hot-button issues still won this presidency. In other words, Trump is such a master linguistic strategist that he could have turned the political chessboard around and still embarrassed the field. So have you been following? So I was playing News or Ruse on the Rokan show on Thursday afternoon.
Oh, great. I love that.
Yes, except yeah. Judy Pilak cheats like
no,
like,
she does
like
not.
A sinner. Oh, God.
She does not.
Oh, yes, she does.
No, she's...
Yes,
everything's
she...
above board in this newsroom. You will never find a single news person during the Rokan show cheating to win.
I notice you clarified during the Rokan show. When are they cheating?
Well, nobody else plays games, so it's only
Roger, that Rokan newsroom up there is like the cantina in Star Wars. You stand outside of there, you look in, and you say you will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. I apologize. I know you're up there, but good Lord.
Hey, right now it's just me and the fish.
And Judy, there's a fish. There is a fish up there,
yeah.
Isn't there? I saw Judy's the leader of that gang, and I just, I don't know, man.
Oh, no way. She would never. I know her. I love her. I cherish her. She would never, ever, ever. Cheat on a game.
I know her, I love her, and I cherish her, and I will tell you as I swear on everything that I know she would, because Judy likes to win. That's what Judy likes. Now, I was down here keeping an eye on her.
Oh, really?
Very closely.
Okay.
And listen, Roger, this is not just me making this up. I was in the halls before I told, oh, Matt, why are you in the building? Oh, I'm going to play News Ruse on Rose Show. Oh, uh-huh. Judy cheats. That's what everybody was saying. Well, Judy
cheats.
Oh,
no.
You know Judy cheats,
spreading
right?
Spreading rumors.
Listen, that's what people were saying.
Yeah.
I don't want to say
who.
I don't want to say who, yeah. But brass was saying.
Oh, my God.
That Judy cheats. So I strolled into the newsroom, and I tried to rattle Judy's cage a little bit before the game, and I said, listen, I'm going to keep my eye on you because I know you're up here cheating. You know what she said?
What?
She said, I will sue you. If you say I'm cheating, I will she pulled a Trump. She told me she'd sue me for saying that.
There you go. See? She doesn't cheat.
So who do you think won the game, Roger?
Judy.
Judy won the game. I'm not here next week.
She's good.
I'm not here next week. Yeah. I have to have the weekend off. But the weekend after that, when I'm back, I'm going to pull the tape.
Uh-oh.
Because I wonder if I could find something.
Right.
I'm going to analyze it. I'm going to send it to Quantico.
You're going to do a little conversation? Like,
I'm going to have people run it, see what they can find in there, if there's a tell in there, how she's... Because what she did, just to be real smarmy about the whole thing, is when Roe would ask her the question for her and her listener contestant helper, she would hold her hands up.
Hold her...
So I
can't be typing and cheating.
Oh, right. Because so you're not supposed to be looking up the answers.
That's the thing. Right. Is Judy's got like four monitors in front of her. She's like, oh, I'm writing the news for 6 o'clock.
Right.
Well, we are. As if you people write news.
Hey.
And, you know what she's doing? She's looking it up.
No, she's not.
Oh, come on, Roger.
I've been up here.
Violetta's up there helping her out.
Violetta's over in the traffic room and
Roger, it's 10 feet away from you. I've seen it up there. Don't make it. Boy, you're really on their side. They sucked you in.
It's my newsroom.
You've gone to the dark side. Anyways. So she was cheating and winning, as usual.
Okay.
But then Roe was having Mark Sapelsa on next to talk about this national, this was on Thursday, it was coming out, this National Enquirer story about Ted Cruz and the alleged mistresses he's had. And I haven't read the story. I've looked at it a little bit. I've read stories about the story.
Yeah, I've read some background on it, too, and how apparently it's been around a lot longer than just now, and they used to call it
sort of a quietly known thing.
Well, they were calling it the thing. That's what I was reading in all these stories that for over a year, apparently, or close to a year,
there were rumblings about,
in quotes, I'm doing air quotes here, the thing. That's what they were calling it.
Now, Donald Trump is distancing himself from it. So Ted Cruz came out and had a little press conference at, I believe, at a cone factory, a factory where they make, like, the orange cones,
safety cones,
which is a great place to go have a, you know, go on a little tour to be feel, hey, they're making cones. And by
American
the way.
American made. Yeah, sure.
That's good. And he got real heated about the whole National Enquirer thing. I believe he brought it up, actually.
Well, it goes back a little before. Apparently, a PAC organization.
Well, but these are two separate things, though, as far as we know. So a PAC supporting Cruz that Cruz claims he has nothing to do with ran an ad in Utah. This is interesting because Cruz's campaign has been accused of some dirty politics.
Mm-hmm.
In Iowa, they allegedly started telling caucus goers that Ben Carson has left Iowa. He's going to drop out tomorrow.
Right.
So don't waste your vote on him tonight. And Cruz won Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
That was when, and this is that, boy, if we go back to Iowa, I thought Trump was about to derail. Because you remember what happened is Ted Cruz wins Iowa. The next day, Donald Trump is calling for a new election in Iowa.
Right, I remember that.
And I'm thinking, oh, God, really? When you lose one, this is what you're going to do? And I thought, here's where he starts going downhill. Mm-hmm. He can't handle the rigors of this, how it works, et cetera, et cetera. He rebounded very well.
Yeah.
But he was calling for a new vote, it shouldn't count. Cruz was playing dirty politics, and it came out that, you know, somebody on his staff was sending out, I think they sent out emails or voicemails, whatever. They did something that was a little underhanded saying, Ben Carson's dropping out, don't waste your vote. So now the issue that Trump had earlier this week was last week when Utah was voting, was on the day of or the day before the vote, there was an ad going around bought by this super PAC that Ted Cruz says he has nothing to do with, that wasn't my ad, that showed a picture of Melania, a very nice picture, from a GQ magazine spread she did a while back.
Because she's a model. That's
she was
she
a
does.
Model,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
On Trump's plane, I don't even know if they were dating at the time of this photo shoot or how it ends up being on his plane, but she's kind of on sort of a bearskin rug type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very male fantasy. And she's not, she probably was completely naked, but you're not seeing all of her lady parts.
No.
You're seeing her derriere a little bit, but it's relatively tasteful. I mean, it's not like it's
artful.
Listen, for first lady, it's very risque. For model, it's nothing.
Exactly.
It's nothing. And so they threw out an ad that said, this is your next first lady of the United States, or you could vote for Ted Cruz on Thursday. And that was their little underhanded thing. And Donald Trump was not happy about that.
Right.
And he tweeted out, as he likes to do, careful, Lion Ted Cruz. He will not say Ted Cruz.
No.
Every time, it's Lion Ted Cruz. Even when he's defending Ted Cruz, it's Lion Ted Cruz. Careful, Lion Ted Cruz, or I'll spill the beans on your wife. Yeah. Now, we don't have no idea what that meant, because Donald does this. He did this to the Ricketts family.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. You know, they're
we
Mrs.
still don't know about
Mrs.
that.
Mrs. Ricketts has supported a PAC that's gone against Donald Trump, so he threatened to reveal some secrets about the Ricketts family.
Right.
And then when people followed up with him on that, he basically made it sound like, I'm going to take out ads saying how bad they've run the Cubs. And it's like, dude, are you not even paying attention at all? Right now, that's not going to help you at all. 2 years ago, maybe. But right now, unless you've got some financial dirt or something, people are pretty happy with how they're running the Cubs at the moment. Anyways, so I think a lot of times Donald likes to say these things, just throw that out there. I'll spill the beans. Well, what are the beans? Well, I'm not going to tell you. I don't want to do that. Oh, God, you could just lie through your teeth all day with things like that. That's a beautiful way to do it. And I think that's what the Dilbert creator is kind of referring to. Like, this dude knows how to spread this. So Donald fires, well, Donald doesn't. He says that. And then one of Donald's supporters or somebody on Twitter says, you don't need to spill the beans. A picture tells a thousand words. And Ted Cruz's wife, who is a lovely person, I don't know her at all, but I've heard political analysts describe her as incredibly smart and talented and all these things. I have no idea because I don't know her. But they took the worst possible photo they could find of her, where she looks like, an angry Caitlyn Jenner with blonde hair. And almost looks like her teeth are like her gums are. I mean, it's so bad. It looks like her gums are bleeding, for goodness sake.
Right.
And the scowl on her face, like she's the Wicked Witch of the West. And next to that, this very beautiful, because she is, she's a model, Melania Trump, just a headshot of her. So it's their two faces side by side. And one just looks, you know, vile. I mean, poor Mrs. Cruz in this photo just looks, I mean, scary. And then Melania looking like Melania. And they said, no need to spill the beans. A picture's worth a thousand words. And Donald retweeted that. So now Ted Cruz is all up in arms.
Right.
That Donald did that, that he's bringing my wife into it. And how dare you attack my wife? Which is fascinating because a PAC supporting him had run this ad that I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't believe Ted ever denounced that ad. Or said that was dirty and they shouldn't have done that. And if you're supporting me, don't you bring his wife into it. I haven't heard him get on that stump. But when Donald retweeted this about Ted's wife, Ted has this righteous indignation about how dare you bring my wife or my kids into this. And my wife's a lovely woman and your wife's a lovely woman. And don't you dare. And then he gets this so upset. And it was great because when he did this we're still not even to the press conference. That's about the latest thing, which is the National Enquirer, which now has this story about these five mistresses. And it's a great sitcom waiting to happen. It's a hooker and a teacher and a political pundit.
Right.
And I forget what the other two are, but it's this great wide variety of professions among the ladies he's apparently allegedly sleeping with. And then so the National Enquirer comes out with this. Trump says he's got nothing to do with it. And he wrote this great response. Like, I haven't read the story. I've only heard about it. I hope it's not true. I hope Lion Ted, he's like, keeps calling him Lion Ted as he's trying to say, I hope it's not true. I hope it's not true that Lion Ted was cheating on his wife with five women, which is just so odd to read him sort of like slap him with the back of his hand as he praises him. And Cruz has another righteous indignation moment at the Cone Factory where he claims that Trump's henchmen put the story out there.
Right.
Because Donald's buddies with the people at the National Enquirer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't hear at least, unless it's out there, but I didn't hear Ted Cruz threaten to sue the National Enquirer.
Nope, haven't heard that.
I don't know why he hasn't. If he's so upset and he's denied it so strongly, which he has, then he should be saying, I'm going to sue the National Enquirer for this because this is patently false and you can't just, you know, make these accusations. And Donald should jump on that bandwagon because he's the one, right, that has said, I'm going to open up these libel laws when I become president.
We're going to sue them all.
So you can sue these people for making these malicious statements. Donald should be out there screaming, this is what I'm talking about. Look what they're doing to Lion Ted.
Right.
Which he would say as he defends him. And, you know, he should be taking the stand on this thing. So who knows if Trump has anything to do with this or not. I don't think anybody would be surprised if he did. I think he might have just goaded people into looking further into Ted by saying spill the beans, although he claimed he would spill the beans about Ted's wife. And none of this appears to be about Ted's wife at all, as far as we can tell. And I just don't know how much credibility anybody puts into the National Enquirer. I mean, the problem, you want to just dismiss the Enquirer, but they've nailed a few of these stories over the years.
And almost all of them political.
Gary Rice, right? Yeah. They got him. And I think there was at least one other. Right? Oh, did John Edwards. I think they're the ones that nailed John Edwards, right?
They've had several.
But then they also print crap, too, right?
Well, yeah, the aliens told them, you know. All
well,
that
that's more News of the World, I think. I don't think the Enquirer deals with the aliens much. I think it's all celebrity-driven. Isn't it like printed TMZ?
I don't even touch
it. I haven't picked one up lately. I used to love the Enquirer as
really?
A kid.
Really?
I loved the Enquirer.
The only time I'd see it is when I'm checking out at the grocery store, and it's there in the rack. I look at the headlines, and I just shake my head. I do. I just, it drives me nuts.
I can't remember. I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I know I read the Enquirer a lot. I think my mom used to buy it when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
It's great escapism. You know,
well, yeah.
It's bad because you worry that they're just spreading stuff about people, and so that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at celebrities and their lives, and when they're screwing up, it just makes you feel a little bit better about your own little life, you know? So I just don't know how much to put into this. The funny thing is, if this story was about Donald, he would be able to just plow right through this without much of a problem. Even if he said, yeah, he'd have this explanation. You know, and he would just say, well, yeah, I slept with him, but blah, 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 blah. Somebody was saying that Donald can't be brought down because he's already said so many nasty, vile things that it's not like anybody's go, yeah, but look at what he said. They'd be like, yeah, I know. He said that. People keep playing. There was a great little internet video that was out this week comparing President Obama and Donald Trump, and it was on women. And how they talk about women.
Mm-hmm.
And these great pieces of speeches from President Obama talking about women in the workplace. And it's a real problem for me if my daughters are going to grow up without the ability to achieve the same things that my sons would have. And all these great. And then they're counterweighting that with clips of Donald Trump from Howard Stern's show over the years, where he's been a guest apparently many times.
Oh, gosh.
And says, you know, Howard gets people to say vile things.
Yeah.
And Trump seems more than happy to have done that. So they've got him talking about women and, you know, it's not good. And I don't think President Trump will ever go on I don't think President Obama will ever go on a Howard Stern show. I just don't see him ever doing that. But Trump has said so much, done so much in the past that he's just like, yeah, it's out there. If you hate me for it, hate me for it. But that's who I am. And it's working for him. Ted Cruz went on one of those shows and talked like that. People would be mortified and hate him. You know, it would be very bad for him. So I just don't know where this is going to end up. And plus, I don't know how much it matters because now you know, the pundits keep going back and forth about whether there's going to be a contested convention or not.
Right.
But the latest that I'm hearing, what's coming up this week? Is it Michigan? Michigan, yeah. Trump's spending the week
in Washington,
Michigan.
Too. Washington State and Wisconsin's coming up, I think, April 5th. Is that next week? Or is that the week after?
It's the week after.
Week after, okay.
Because a week from this Sunday is April 3rd, so, okay. so a week from this Tuesday.
Right.
But I thought I heard that if Trump can win Michigan, I think Michigan might not be. Now, Michigan might not be till then either. I know there's a little time off between these primaries, but I heard them saying if Trump wins Michigan, then maybe he is going to get enough delegates to outright win the thing.
I'm looking up the primaries right now. We've got, let's see, Alaska, March 26th. Alaska, 16 delegates. Last poll closes at 1 p.m. Central Time. Washington, 101 delegates, and Hawaii, 25 delegates.
I would just campaign in Hawaii the whole time. Like, you know what? I'm
Look
winning this state.
Vegas,
I'm winning this
Mexico,
state.
Mexico, Hawaii.
I've never been to Hawaii. I want to go.
I wouldn't mind, too.
A texter from 630 writes, I don't believe the Cruise thing. Every woman I talk to finds him creepy. He looks like Count Chocula. He really does look like Count Chocula. But I think people like Count Chocula. People don't seem
like
to like
Count Chocula. It's good cereal.
Why does nobody seem to like Ted? I mean, his Senate colleagues, everybody, Congress. I mean, you never hear people, college roommates, everybody's like bad-mouthing Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I've been hearing that, too. I don't know. It's... But nobody said politics.
Maybe it's because of things like this.
What?
In his rant against Donald Trump, he called him a sniveling coward. Who says sniveling coward anymore? I mean, you're not getting a millennial vote by saying sniveling coward. He's right. A sniveling. He sounds like Dastardly Do-Right from a cartoon. He's going to have
come for the rent.
He needs a pencil-thin mustache to say sniveling coward. Called him a sniveling coward. You mess with my wife. You mess with my kids. That'll do it every time. Donald, you are a sniveling coward. Leave Heidi the hell alone. Shantae says he should take off one glove and slap him across the face then.
That might happen. I'm surprised that didn't happen in one of the debates.
Well, are there any more debates? Because now Donald isn't debating.
He doesn't
want
to do it anymore.
Now he's done with it.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him. We've done it 1,000 times.
He's
is this more debates
lead
than we've ever had in our life for a presidential cycle? It's ridiculous.
He's in the lead. He's got the most delegates. If it comes to the convention where he needs more delegates, I think he can get them and that it's not going to be that much of a brokered convention. So what does he have to gain by going into a debate again?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, after all the debates we've had, he's just going to end up saying the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah. That's true. Well, I mean, that's what they've done for so long now. And I don't blame him for not bothering to, you know, debate anymore. The debates are done.
Yeah.
All right. News is next. 720 WGN. It's Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN, the morning show with Max and O coming up at 5 a.m. Mike Stevens has Outside the Loop Radio coming up at 6. This week he's talking food trucks. I heard the promos last night. It's got me a little bit hungry thinking about it. Mike loves tacos. You know that Mike, like, lives for tacos, Roger?
No, I did not.
Outside of his lovely wife, Jenny, and their beautiful baby, I think number 3 on the list of priorities in Mike's life would be tacos.
I did not know that.
Yes. You ever bring Mike a taco, he's your friend for life.
Really?
Yes. Ooh, yes. Ooh, ooh. Bring him. It's got to be a good taco because he eats at like the best taco places.
And I don't eat tacos.
Well, you're missing out. So.
I would not. I mean, give me a hard shell, meat, a little cheese, a little lettuce. I'm done. I'm a fussy eater.
I can't do the hard shells.
Oh, really?
I need soft tortilla.
Oh,
soft,
okay.
Flour tortilla.
Flour tortilla.
Colleen gets the corn, but I like the flour tortillas,
Okay.
So. That's how it works at our house. Cool. So you know what I did last year, Roger? Because I want Jack's taking Spanish in high school, and I think because Colin and I like going to Mexico,
right?
I'd like to learn a little Spanish.
Nothing wrong with that. I did that once. I had long before I ever met my wife, still in college, SIU Carbondale, and
just drove by there recently because I went to Nashville last weekend. So
there
we
you
sort
go.
Of
that's right.
Went in the area at least.
Okay, well,
that's a long drive.
It is a long drive.
Oh my God!
Yeah, this was back before they raised the speed limits again. I was dating a young lady who was going to school in Mexico.
Cool.
And very fluent in Spanish and everything. And so we had made plans where over spring break, I would go visit her. Booked the airline. And prior to going down, we were on the quarter system then.
Mm-hmm.
I took a quarter of introductory Spanish, just enough to get me through. Right? Because I knew I was going to be with her. She knows everything.
Yeah.
Right? Not a problem. And then a week before I was supposed to leave, her father says, oh, no, you're coming home to her. And so there goes the airline flight and the Spanish and everything else.
So wait, where did she live? Somewhere in Illinois?
Skokie.
she already have a ticket for Mexico?
Did I?
Did she?
She lived. She was going to school there. She stayed. She was staying with a family there.
Oh, and you were going to go visit her while she was down there.
I was
going to
hang out
home.
With her. Yeah. Father called her home, and that was kind of the
Was it because
end of the
Dad found out Roger was coming to visit?
No, no. It had nothing to do with me or anything else.
Did you break up with her because of this? Because you were
not
so
because
mad at the
of
money
it. It
just blew
we kind
of
drifted apart.
Had you, you know, that fateful trip to Mexico? Who knows what would happen?
Yeah. Wow. She still lives in the area. We're very good friends.
Get out of here.
Yeah. She got married, kids, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we went to prom together. Went to high school prom together.
Mm. So you weren't both at Carbondale?
No.
I see.
No,
I thought
no.
She was on an exchange.
All her years, she was going to school in Mexico. University of the Americas, I think, was the campus.
Where was that in Mexico? Where would you have gone to visit her?
The word ciudad, which means city, that's about as far as I got.
Yeah.
Ciudad something or other.
Okay. City something or other.
Yeah.
One of those. Anyway, so last year they had one of those, you know, you hear the ads, we do them all the time, I think, for Rosetta Stone.
Right.
And I bought Spanish Rosetta Stone.
Cool.
A year ago. It's still in a box.
Is it unsealed?
No, it's sealed. Haven't still even sealed. Opened it. But we're going to do it this summer with the kids.
Okay.
Have to do it. I want to open it up and have us, like, over the summer. I want us all to do it. And so I said to Anna today, I said, we'll have Taco Tuesday every Tuesday. And at Tuesday dinner, we have to speak Spanish.
That is so cool.
Yeah, this is why I'm the most annoying father in the world. Because of plans like these that just drive them insane. Okay, so it's Easter weekend.
Yep.
It's really the holiest weekend of the calendar for us Christians, and certainly for Catholics like me. Although I'm not a good Catholic, I didn't go to church at all on Good Friday. My father, I remember as a kid growing up, every Friday from noon to three, he would be at church. Somehow we never got dragged with. I don't know why that is or how we got out of that. But we did have a rule in the house, I don't know if people still observe this, that between noon and three, you had no TV on, you didn't have the radio on.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be at least relatively solemn time.
Right.
Because I remember ratting out my brother one year for watching the Cubs game, like at, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Good Friday. Geez. I told Mom. I know.
You're
what
so
a rotten
bad.
Little brother
yeah,
I was.
Really.
So, Vanity Fair had Sam Roberts, an obituary writer for the New York Times, imagine how, given the facts available then, his predecessors might have reported on the aftermath of an execution in the Middle East one Friday 2 millennia ago. And this is how it reads. Jesus of Nazareth. I'm imagining Bob Surratt doing this because when Bob and Marianne were on, Bob would always read the interesting obituaries in the paper of like somebody who had some great, interesting life. And Bob handled that very well. And so I'm channeling my inner.
There you go.
Bob Surratt here. Jesus of Nazareth, a Galilean carpenter. Turned itinerant minister whose appeals to piety and whose repute as a healer had galvanized a growing contingent of believers, died on Friday after being crucified that morning just outside of Jerusalem, only days after his followers had welcomed him triumphantly to the city as, quote, the anointed one and, quote, the son of David. He was about 33. For a man who had lived the first three decades of his life in virtual obscurity, he attracted a remarkable following in only a few years. His reputation reflected a persuasive coupling of message, personal magnetism, and avowed miracles. But it also resonated in the current moment of spiritual and economic discontent and popular resentment of authority and privilege, whether wielded by foreigners from Rome or by the Jewish priests in Jerusalem and their confederates. Still, Jesus had been preceded in recent years by a litany of false messiahs. He followed a roster of self-styled prophets who promised salvation, and with their ragtag followers from separatist sects, cults, and fractious rebel groups, were branded as bandits by the governing Romans, ostracized by the ruling priests as heretics in a period of pessimistic apocalyptic, thank you.
You're welcome.
Pessimistic apocalyptic expectation and already lost to history. Well, that was a tough paragraph. Despite the throngs that greeted him in Jerusalem and applauded his daring assault on the temple and his attack on the money changers who operate within its precincts with impunity, it is arguable whether the legacy of this man, whom some contemporaries dismissed, if guardedly, as the one they call Messiah, will be any more enduring or his followers any more committed than the prophets and their devotees who preceded him. Moreover, what he might have accomplished further had he lived is also debatable, since the average lifespan today is not much more than 40. Jesus seems to have been universally respected as a wise man whose appeal for mercy, humility, and compassion reverberated powerfully. But he left no written record, and according to those who heard him, he sometimes preached mixed messages. He would bless the peacemakers, but also suggest that his followers buy swords. He would insist that his mission was solely to minister to, quote, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, but would also direct his devotees to proselytize to other nations. Even less is known about Jesus' youth. He was born Yeshua bar Joseph. His very name, Yahweh Saves, or Freedom after Joshua, could be considered incitable. In all likelihood, in Nazareth, he was known as the Nazarene. Some adherents, however, insist that he was born in Bethlehem, a claim that would polish his bona fides as an heir to King David. His father was named Joseph, although references to him are scarce after Jesus' birth. His mother was Miriam, or Mary, and because he was sometimes referred to as Mary's son, questions had been raised about his paternity. He is believed to have been the eldest of at least six siblings, including four brothers, James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and several sisters. He never married, unusual for a man of his age, but not surprising for a Jew with apocalyptic vision. His survivors include his mother, his brother James, and a number of other siblings. His family was devoutly Jewish, probably one of 100 or so Jewish families in a windswept, mostly mud and brick hilltop village in Lower Galilee, populated largely by peasants and laborers. Although it is only an hour's walk from cosmopolitan Sepphoris, the Nazareth in which he was born still remains unidentified on most maps, an indication of its insignificance. Jesus spoke Aramaic, probably with a smattering of Hebrew and Greek, but although Nazareth had a synagogue, there is no record of his having had access to a formal education. He grew up in a turbulent time. King Herod the Great had managed to pacify rival groups of Jews, Arabs, Greeks, Samaritans, and Syrians on behalf of the territory occupied by Rome for nearly six decades. But Herod's death, roughly the same year that Jesus was born, and the completion of the temple in Jerusalem contributed to mass unemployment, which further widened the gap in economic inequality that Jesus would witness growing up. In his late 20s, Jesus was drawn to a preacher named John, who initiated his followers into what he believed was the true nation of Israel. According to John's custom, they repented their sins and purged their impurities in the Jordan River, an immersion ritual commonly known in Hebrew as mikveh and translated from Greek as baptisma. Jesus was baptized shortly before John the Baptist's explosive popularity rattled the skittish Romans who arrested and executed him. Even before that, though, Jesus had begun his own ministry, referring to himself as rabbi or teacher, citing the scriptures, which suggested he was literate, but also speaking in original parables. He was accompanied eventually by a dozen disciples, mirroring the 12 tribes of Israel. He was unusually receptive to women and forgiving to sinners, those who flouted God's commandments rather than priestly rituals, and even to reviled tax collectors. Despite his anti-establishment rhetoric, he acknowledged the right of Rome to collect taxes. His following of mostly Jewish and Greek heritage, he even converted contemptuous Samaritans, grew as word of the miracles he had performed spread before him. Those miracles mirrored those performed by earlier Jewish prophets in the Hebrew Bible, although Jesus was said by his followers to have outdone his predecessors. Elijah, in one instance, was said to have employed three prayers and some theatrics to raise a child from the dead. Jesus reportedly did it with just a word. Elisha, in another, was said to have fed 100 people with 20 barley loaves. Jesus was credited with feeding 5,000 with five loaves. Supported largely by the hospitality of benefactors in Capernaum on the Sea of Galilee, Jesus avoided large cities on his pilgrimage of preaching, which culminated last week in his arrival in Jerusalem. It is believed that he timed his arrival to occur on the eve of Passover, when the city's population swells to celebrate a holiday rife with contemporary symbolism, the Jews' salvation from foreign subjugation. After running afoul of the Jewish elite in Jerusalem for blasphemy and his arrest on Thursday, Jesus was sentenced to death by Governor Pontius Pilate. The Jewish authorities lacked jurisdiction to impose capital punishment. The charge, in effect, was treason for claiming to be king of the Jews or, quote, the anointed one, Messiah in Hebrew and Aramaic, Christos in Greek. After he was declared dead on Friday, he was buried nearby in a cave. On Sunday, his disciples reported that the body was missing. All right.
That was pretty good.
It's fascinating, yeah. I think. It's interesting. The whole brothers and sister thing. What did I miss? Did I skip that day?
Yeah, unless they were not blood brothers and sisters, but spiritual.
Well, I don't think that's how that was reported, though, in this obituary.
Yeah, they didn't make that distinction.
Now, I've seen things over the years where something was found, and we think this proves Jesus had brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh.
And then it never seems to really pan out completely. But I wonder what he was using. I wish there were, like, cliff notes at the end to here's where I source these things.
Right.
Because there must be some stuff out there that says that he had... is believed to have been the eldest of at least six siblings, including four brothers, James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and several sisters.
I wonder where he, because I
don't
remember.
Some people claim he married also.
Jesus's brothers and sisters, the Gospel of Mark 6.3, and the Gospel of Matthew 13:55-56, state that James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon were the brothers of Jesus, the son of Mary. The same verses also mention unnamed sisters of Jesus.
Now, James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon?
Well, they say they list it as Joseph, J-O-S-E-S, okay. And it says, or Joseph, in parentheses.
Interesting. 312-981-7200. If you have a comment or a question, you are more than welcome to call in. We're still hoping to check in with our friends in Ireland to see, talk about the island that's looking for people to move there, although not just if you're planning on leaving the country, but just if you're planning to move, come on over to Ireland. How sad that Gary Shandling died this week. This has been a weird year.
Very weird.
So many musicians at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And now Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
Who was, I know he is just revered by comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somewhat a mystery to a lot of just regular people. He had these great shows that I think were...
groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking, but not insanely popular. You know,
right.
He wasn't on Friends or Seinfeld. You know, mm-hmm. He didn't have a show like that. Had a show that everybody looks back to as look at what this did and how this changed things.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like also was maybe a little bit misunderstood at the time, right?
Right.
But when you look back at those shows, the Larry Sanders Show I watch mm-hmm. more than the It's Gary Shandling Show, but it's just a great behind. I mean, it really gave birth to, I think, The Office and a lot of different things that followed this one camera breaking the wall, format,
mm-hmm.
seeing behind the scenes. And what a great idea to do it as a talk show.
Yeah. Great concept.
Lawrence O'Donnell, who's on MSNBC. Who most people probably, if you're conservative, it's probably, it's one of those MSNBC guys you probably don't like at all.
Oh.
And Colleen and I really enjoy Chris Matthews because I think he tries to be like he's, I think he tries to be impartial, but he's mm-hmm. clearly so Democrat, right?
Right.
But Lawrence O'Donnell's on the same station. I was flipping around the other night. And the beginning of Lawrence O'Donnell show is on, and he's talking about Gary Shandling. And it was kind of a little interesting thing he did, saying how he just saw him last week in L.A., or like 2 days before Gary died.
Mm-hmm.
What did Gary die on, Wednesday or Thursday? So I think the previous Sunday, he's like, I'm outside of Starbucks in L.A. talking to somebody, and I see Gary go walking in. He's like, I know Gary well enough that we would stop and say hi and talk for a minute. And he probably would have told me a very funny joke about Trump's candidacy, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but I was talking to somebody and walked by, so I didn't stop. And then I'm still talking to them when he walked back out. And he was far enough away that I should have yelled, hey, Gary, and talked to him for a minute. But I thought, oh, I'll see him next week. Da, da, da. And he went on about how you just never know when that moment's going to pass. And you don't get it back. So you should always take advantage of it.
Well, I don't know if you watch Comedians in Cars.
I haven't. I love that show. I have not seen the Gary Shandling one, but I saw that being cast around.
It was the last episode.
Get out of here.
It was, because I watch it. I'm always checking Crackle, because I never know when the new one's going to come up.
Right.
And I'm always checking Crackle to see what the latest one is, if there's a new one on there. And it was the latest one where he's with Gary Shandling. I was on the floor laughing.
Really?
It was hilarious. Honest to goodness, the two of them together could have had a series. That's how perfect they were together. It's so understated, the comedy. It's just amazing.
Gary Shandling is all about, to me, the performance, the nervous self-deprecation, mm-hmm. weird energy. Gary could almost make you uncomfortable watching him, which would be this weird joy in watching Gary Shandling. Like, he sort of makes you like, oh God, he's going to, you know, he makes you nervous as mm-hmm. you're watching him.
He in the early performances, if you watch the early Carson performances, he looks like he's shaking. He's very nervous on stage.
And I wonder if that was really him or if that was the persona, because I feel like that was the sort of thing he always kept up.
Yeah.
Like, very insecure. I mean, that's the whole Larry Sanders show, right? Is he's
well, sure.
incredibly insecure, famous talk show host. Yeah.
And a lot of that, not a lot, but some of that comes out because he talks about his wife in the Comedians in Cars. The two of them talk about their wives and how their lives changed and everything from because of who they married and everything. So it's just hilarious. But one of the things I saw when I first came on this morning was a notice from TMZ, and it says, "Doctor refuses to sign death certificate, coroner launches investigation." But they weren't going to do an autopsy.
Well, so I haven't followed it that closely, but I thought the latest I had heard was he called 911 himself.
Right, and while he was on the phone with them, the reports claim that he had a heart attack, and he collapsed right there, and that he had not shown any signs of any ill health prior to that. But now apparently there's something going on. I don't know what.
And the 911 call has not been released as of yet?
I'm trying to remember where I read the report of that. It might have been TMZ or Variety, where I read about that on the day that it was announced that he passed. There was a full report not what was said necessarily, not like word for word, not a transcript, but a good description of how that encounter went, the phone call. And I'll find it eventually. But still, it's just this, like you said, this has been a weird year for this kind of stuff.
It has been. Kathy's on 720 WGN. Kathy, please hold for just a moment. We got to take a quick break for the news, and then we'll get you on. She's going to explain to us about Jesus's brothers.
Ah, okay.
After we get to the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Sad Ben Affleck video. I don't know if you've seen this yet.
I just wondered whether that how that makes you guys feel and whether it will even affect the film as such.
Well, the interesting thing is that
hello darkness my old friend.
He's being interviewed along with is it Henry Cavill or Cavill who plays Superman?
Plays Superman, yeah.
So these two are being interviewed, some English guys telling him, well, the reviews are out there, they're mixed at best. How does it make you feel? So Henry starts explaining and Ben Affleck has this sad look on his face. So the person that made this video plays this song and comes in on Ben, who's just looking down like, this is a bad choice. I shouldn't have done this. Bad career move.
Oh, my gosh.
Ben?
I agree.
So Henry gives this whole long explanation, and the guy goes, Ben, I agree.
And he's laughing all the way to the bank.
Yes.
With the amount of money they made, apparently, in the first
day. Yeah, the movie's still doing well, even though it's gotten really not good reviews.
Yeah.
A few people have come out and said, hey, I like it no matter what. Right. I do want to go see it. I think I might get out with the kids to go see it.
It's that kind of movie where you kind of have to see it on the big screen. It does. Yeah. It just won't translate well to the TV unless you got to, you know, unless you're like Dave Plyer, who's got like a 100-foot screen in his.
Does he really?
It's got to be. Well. It's got a separate room for movies and TV shows.
He's got a little screening room?
He's got a big screening room with candy machines and those big, cushy, lean-back chairs.
Are you hanging out a little bit at the Plyer residence on the weekends there, Roger?
You know.
Aren't you special?
You're special.
312-981-7200. A couple of calls have come in. Kathy was holding on very patiently for a long time to tell us a little bit about Jesus' brothers. Kathy, how are you doing this morning?
I'm fine, honey. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for holding on for so long. We appreciate it.
I had a friend from the Mideast that I was good friends with, and she told me one summer her cousin spent the time with her, and she said that we didn't have a word for cousins. Whenever I identify them as my brothers.
Oh, so you think that could have just been reference to cousins?
Right. And then there's another story that when Mary and Joseph were married, Joseph was a widower, and he might have had children from a previous marriage.
See, I've never heard about Joseph being a possible widower. That's new to me, too.
Well, if you study the Bible and you believe in the version of the Catholic Bible, when Mary and Joseph were betrothed, Mary had just wanted, when the angel said, you're going to have a son, she said, how can this be? And the reason she said, how can this be? Because she had promised virginity. And at that time, some of the women who promised virginity, when they entered into a marriage arrangement with a man, that it was an arrangement that was made beforehand. And when she made that arrangement with Joseph, she was going to be a virgin. She was supposed to have had a virgin birth. And the man that she married, Joseph, agreed to that. And that wasn't uncommon during that time in history. And so he could have been a widower, an older man, a widower who had been married before and had children from a previous marriage.
Interesting. A couple of interesting explanations. Thank you so much, Kathy. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, honey.
Have a great morning. Thank you.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you as well. I don't know the name of her. Oh, it's Charlie. Charlie is on 720 WGN. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you as well, sir.
I mean, I always listen to WGN, and since the talk was about Jesus, I just wanted to give you, if you like, just a couple of thoughts about the Islamic thoughts of Jesus.
Okay, yes. That would be interesting.
Yes, according to the Islamic faith, every Muslim person has to believe in Jesus just as much as they believe in Muhammad.
Really?
And yes, sir. And we hold for Jesus the highest love and respect, just like the rest of the prophets. Now, according to the Quran, you know, the birth of Jesus, when he was born under the tree, and the Virgin Mary was shocked of how she had the baby, you know, without be another man. Jesus looked at her and said, Ma, don't worry, I am here, and I am God's servant. May peace be upon me the day I was born, the day I die, and the day I resurrect. So even according to the Islamic belief that Jesus spoke at his birth, and him and his cousin, John the Baptist, they used to always play and, in the neighborhood. And they used to have a discussion where in the Quran, God spoke of John the Baptist and said, may peace be upon you the day you were born and the day you die and the day you were resurrected. And Jesus always used to tell John the Baptist, I said about myself, peace be upon me, but in your case, the Lord spoke of you. And according to the Islamic belief, that judgment day will not come until Jesus descends down from heaven on the wings of two angels, where he rules the earth for 40 years. And those would be the most peaceful years that earth has ever had. And then after that, judgment day will start.
Hmm.
So these are just a little bit of thoughts of the Islamic belief of Judaism.
That's fascinating. Charlie, as long as I have you on the phone and we're talking about what's in the Quran and what's in the Bible and things like that, let me ask you, because so we have all these things happening around the world, and I wonder sometimes if, and you know the Quran and I don't, but if I looked at my King James Bible and I went by all the craziness that happens in the Old Testament, and we said this is how we're doing things, we could be committing a lot of pretty terrible acts as they would be viewed today as well. So when we look at what happens around the world and things that are being done in the name of Islam, is that how do you view that? And what do you say about that?
Well, the Quran and the Islamic teaching have never swayed toward hate or killing of innocent people. It talks about times of the wars between nations, and as far as the religion is concerned, it does not, and I hope, you know, my words are clear, it does not in any way, shape, or form condone what this terrorist group is doing with ISIS. This is a group that was born because of the struggles that were there, and unfortunately, they are attracting people who are misinformed of what the religion is. And the sad story is, like what happened the other day with Brussels. I mean, as a Muslim person, you are sitting there watching the TV, watching what's happening, and your heart is being torn for what's going on, and at the same time, you have to defend, you know, your religion. And the one thing, you know, that really is not fair is that this group is doing to the Muslims in the Muslim country more than what it's doing in Western Europe. The only problem is it doesn't get broadcast. Like, yeah. For example, a couple of weeks ago when they had the terrorist act in Turkey, more people died in the Turkey terrorist act, you know, Muslim people living there. And then 2 weeks before that, you know, the Jordanian government, they found a plot that ISIS was trying to blow up so much in Jordan, but they caught him in time. So those people are doing to the Muslim more than what they're doing to the West. And, you know, we as you know, as individuals, as citizens, I mean, you know, when we talk to our friends, when we talk to our neighbors, when we talk to the people we know, try to explain them to that. But the people that take, you know, really criticism for this is the leaders of the Islamic world. You know, they should hold a press conference. If you go talk to an imam at the mosque, they'll tell you, yes, you know, we condemn this. This is not Islam. This is not the religion. And then our question always to them is, well, then why don't you call the media? Why don't you, you know, let everybody know that this is not what we're all about?
So you feel that Muslim leadership has not done enough to get out in front of that and say, hey, this is not this. Yeah, that's interesting, because you hear that call, and then I've seen other reports that, hey, a lot of people do speak out on this. Maybe we don't hear it as much, maybe because there's not one leader. Like, I've got the Pope who could speak, you know, on behalf of all Catholics very easily and you know, get a voice. It must be very tough for you, Charlie, just besides what these groups and these people are doing to other Muslims and to people around the world. But for you just to walk down the street here in America to practice the Islamic faith when you know everybody's looking at you sideways and, you know, profiling you, which we're all naturally doing, which we all think about, especially when something actually happens. And, you know, all the problems mosques are having opening and people don't want them in their neighborhoods and this presidential election and the calls to keep an eye on you people, that's got to be very tough for you to handle all that.
Well, you know what? Here is how tough it is. I migrated to the States 32 years ago. I was 18 years old. And I spent my whole life in the state. This is my land. This is my home. This is my country. And I've been a law-abiding citizen all these years. And I had 5 children here. My oldest daughter just graduated from medical school. My son is a mechanical engineer. And the sad story is my youngest daughter, who is 9 years old, the other day she comes home and she said, hey, Dad, this guy that's running for president, you know, the kids were talking in school that he's going to build a big wall, kick us out of the country and we can never come back. And I said, that's not true. I said, that's not true. You know, we sit at home. We live our life. I go to work. I come home. I sit with my daughter. I watch the Disney Channel because that's what she likes to watch. We live our normal life. And the sad thing is that now with the way Trump have, you know, I am 100% saying that we should not allow in this country any person that we suspect that will do us any harm, mm-hmm. whether you're a Muslim, whether whatever. But the way Trump, you know, portrayed it is that, you know, none of them. Now, I am 100% for, you know, saying nobody can come in unless we know their background, we know who they are. Mm-hmm. And now it's like a challenge between Trump and between Cruz. Who can say the most hurtful things about the Islamic community so he can get more votes?
Yeah, you just wait till one of them gets a nomination. They'll start coming back towards the middle then. But yeah, exactly. I hear it. Charlie, I so appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts and giving us a little history lesson as well on the Islamic faith. Thank you very much for doing that. And thank you for being a good American and toughing out these tough times and, you know, speaking up for what's right and defending your faith and enlightening us all. We need more communication between all faiths, and that's the only way to kind of get through this. And hopefully things start working out better and, you know, the military operations, whatever, get control of things. And hopefully we have better days ahead. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thank you so much for giving me that.
You bet. You bet. Have a great morning. 312-981-7200. Actually, we're going to take a quick break. We talked earlier about the island of Inishturk off of Ireland, where they're looking for people to move there. Reported in the media as when you want to move when Trump gets elected, that might not quite be what they're actually trying to say. Stephen Young, the chairperson of the island of Inishturk, will join us on the phone next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. We've got Orion Live with the morning show coming up in just a couple of minutes. Shantae's trying to get Stephen Young on the phone. So here's the story that came out. Remote Irish island seeks Americans fleeing Donald Trump presidency. But we understand that's not really what they're doing. That's just how this was spun. But it says that Inishturk off of County Mayo has seen its once thriving population plummet to just 58, with only three pupils attending the local primary school. The dwindling community's leaders are desperately trying to entice families to move over to breathe new life into the isolated outpost and secure its future. And they stress their tranquil isle, located 9 miles off the coast, could make an ideal permanent refuge for those who cannot face life in the U.S. headed by Donald Trump. They say our biggest concern is employment and trying to encourage families to move over here because the population is declining. Stephen Young is the chairperson of the island of Inishturk. I believe I have him on the phone right now. Stephen, how are you this morning?
Hello. Yes, fine. Thank you. Enjoying Easter.
Oh, good. Good. Well, happy Easter weekend to you. So did I say this right? You are the chairperson of the island and it's pronounced Inishturk?
Inishturk. That's right. Yes. It's there is an island committee, which is has overall responsibility for, we have a community development coordinator on the island, so we employ the coordinator and we run a community club.
Okay, so this is an island just off the coast of Ireland. You are part of Ireland in whole, you're just a separate island?
That's right. We're about 9 miles off the west coast of Mayo, so we're out in the Atlantic, nothing between us and America, looking westwards. And it's a very small island. It's just a few miles long by just about a couple of miles wide. And we have we've got 29 households and we have just over 50 people on the island. So it's a very small community.
How big was the community at one point? What's the largest it's ever been in the last couple of decades?
Well, it has going a long way back. There would have been several hundred people on the island. But then in more recent years, smaller than that. But there has been a gradual decline in the numbers because just the lack of employment opportunities, and then the younger people on the island go back to the mainland. They go to the mainland for their secondary education and beyond. And then they look for employment beyond the island. So people come back and gather at sort of festival times, family times, you know, but otherwise the basic population is down to just over 50 now.
So since it was at one point a larger population, are there empty houses? Are there abandoned buildings? Does it kind of seem a little bit like a ghost town, or is it just evolved over the years to this is the size and this is the amount of buildings and things like that?
Yes, it's over historically it's contracted without empty buildings being left much, because the masonry from buildings has been reused in other structures on the island, whether that's to do with farming or houses. So there really aren't empty houses as such on the island.
So it
doesn't have that kind of feeling to it. It's a very vibrant community, albeit it's a small community, but it's a very vibrant community. But it is that's the sort of the challenge for the future is building the population back up. We have a small primary school, which we just have three pupils in the school at the moment. We have one baby on the island, born in the last year. Mm. But it's really about encouraging people to come to the island is the challenge. And then, of course, we've got to tackle the issue of building new accommodation on the island.
Sure. Is there a hospital on the island, or is there a doctor on the island?
We have a health centre on the island, and that's why someone with my unexpectedly not Irish accent is living on the island, because my wife Maggie is the island nurse. So we came to the island just over a year ago, and we live on the island. The job we live in actually in one half of the health centre, and I. My own practice is as a designer, a graphic designer, and we have fantastic broadband on the island. So I've actually been able to carry on my work with a British partner from the island just using broadband, which is great.
Interesting.
So that's one thing we can definitely offer people, you know, is the ability to work here and still connect.
Well, I'll tell you what, sometimes here in the States that the internet access can be so bad, some people might say, you know what, I'll move to Ireland to get away from Comcast. Right. They'll be fine with me. Tell me, Stephen, do most of the people that live on the island, if they're still working, do most of them travel to the mainland for work or just work whatever jobs are there on the island?
Most people do a lot of different things, and it's all to do with the land and the sea. So at this time of year, everybody's bringing out lobster pots again. They would have, you know, households might have many hundreds of lobster pots for a single household, which are strung out in lines of 50 or so at a time. So lobster, crab, fishing, line fishing and net fishing. And then everybody on the island has sheep. So there's the island is divided into private land per household. And then we also have an area which is called commonage, which is land that everybody shares, and sheep are kept on that. And then in addition to that, some people do part-time building work, a range of different jobs, actually. It's kind of what you can do to survive, you know.
Well, I'm all out of time because my show is ending. But, Stephen, I'd love to check in with you again in a few weeks and find out a little more, because I think there's a lot to find out. Like, what do you do on the island? What are the possibilities? If I wanted to move there, could I open up a job? Could we open up a golf course? What could we do, you know, to encourage people to move here? So Shaunae's going to get your number, or Shaunae's going to get your number, and then we'll check in with you again in a couple of weeks if you're willing.
That would be lovely. That would be great. Happy to do it, yeah.
And Stephen, in the meantime, InishTurkIsland.com, right? I-N and then Ish and then TurkIsland.com is the website to find out more about you guys, right?
That's the one, yep. InishTurkIsland.com.
Excellent. Yep. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good morning. All right. Thank you very much.